Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. We're sitting alongside president and founder of the Hoban Law Group, Bob Hoban. Today we are talking about, could CBD cure coronavirus, claims and representations? And we are joined by Saul Kay, founder and CEO of both ICANN and Canatech. Saul, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you so much. Hope everyone is staying safe and isolated.
Absolutely. And with that in mind, would you give us just a flavor of what the sense is like in Israel around coronavirus?
Sure. Complete panic and lockdown. The government here has taken extreme measures for keeping isolation with very clear, responsible messaging that this isn't to prevent the outbreak, but to enable the healthcare system to handle the flow of patients. Because if everyone goes on respirators, which is the outcome of about 10% of the patients so far that we're seeing, if this goes very wide very quickly, that becomes a very serious problem on our health system here in Israel, which is already very stretched. So they've taken some, strong measures. You can't go to work unless you're in a critical business. Critical businesses are obviously pharmacies, supermarkets, doctor's offices, things like that. But from my perspective, I'm a pharmacist. I've got four pharmacists running in two different shifts to make sure that we're able to bring continual service to our thousands of patients. And it's tough knowing that I'm in that situation. I'm putting my family at risk. I'm putting my workers at risk, but we have to because we're, on the front lines. Is definitely interesting times.
Well, so again, in light of all that, we do sincerely appreciate you taking some time. And, what we did is we thought we'd go out, as I mentioned a moment ago, and cover some topics I think that people are thinking about, give people an idea of what's happening around the world, and just trying to keep people thinking and positive about what potential challenges and opportunities are ahead of us, especially as it relates to what a lot of us spend most of our time doing, and that is, working and driving relationships and going forward. So in that spirit, taking on sort of a lighter topic, can CBD cure or address the coronavirus? And that's not necessarily the question, but that's the way we set this episode up. We've seen shutdowns in Oregon, in California, and some East Coast states of businesses purporting to sell CBD, which can cure, quote unquote, the coronavirus or substantially reduce the inflammation, boost your immune system, so forth and so on. And we know that claims are a tricky process when it relates to a product. So what are some things you're seeing out there, and how can people take away some serious messaging at this point in time when they're out there making these irresponsible claims, which doesn't make the industry look very good?
Yeah, it certainly makes us more like snake oil salesmen when this happens. And as an industry, and as someone that's been pushing hard on thought leadership and doing this industry right, it doesn't serve us in any way. I called Professor Meshulam and Professor Meiri today just to get a feel on whether they're looking at the anti-immune, possible antiviral aspect of cannabinoids. And if there are two people in the world that are going to be doing that, those are probably the two. And they're not encouraged. So making false claims, having this fake news, isn't good. There are some possibly positive things that cannabinoids can do for the immune system, possibly good for bronchodilation, possibly good as an antibacterial, and certainly good as a pain reliever, but definitely not as a COVID prevention or treatment.
coming from a background working with pharmaceutical companies and yourself in this industry deeply, it's one thing to understand the science, or at least think that we understand the science as non-medically trained people, lawyers in particular, and other folks in the industry. You don't need to know the medicinal side behind it, except you can draw some conclusions from what's out there. Even if we take those studies for granted about all of the different things that cannabinoids can do, and I don't dispute any of them for a moment, but what I do suggest is that that still does not translate to how you can represent what a product does in the cannabis marketplace. That's where I'm going with this, is trying to understand from your background what it takes to get a product through places where it can make a claim or representation, whether it's a food, a supplement, or a drug. It's not easy. Even if it's a fact, it doesn't mean you can put it on your website or your label.
Right. Well, if we look at some of the clinical trials here in Israel, and it gets really interesting. So there was a study done by David Basser, a company called Talent, who was acquired by Calithera. They did an 11-person study on a disease called GVHD, graft versus host disease, where you get bone marrow grafted into you, and a typical response is you have an inflammatory reaction to that bone marrow transplant. And the outcome is unfortunately, if you get GVHD, 80% of people die. And so they use CBD to treat that. And then lots of other companies jump on the bandwagon saying CBD treats GVHD. Now it does, but the study was done at 300 milligrams a day. And your CBD that you're buying from your gas station at 10 or 25 milligrams a day is certainly not a comparable product. So even when you do make claims, there's often this claim that, well, this helps for that, therefore I can claim that it helps. And, you know, claims is very difficult. On pharmaceuticals, you make claims, if they're novel, that your product does something. And most of the time, pharmaceuticals make claims that they do something a little bit better than something that's already been proven. So if you look at something like Prozac, which is a drug for antidepression, as an antidepressant, a drug for depression, and it was proven that it works well. It's an SSRI, a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. And all the other drugs that came after it, like Cipralex and Lexapro and Lustral, came out afterwards on the basis that they were a little bit better than Prozac. So the idea of a claim is something essential. Now, when you look at nutraceuticals, food supplements have a wider range of claimability. It is shown to help with, or it might prevent the symptoms of. And that's where you get the idea of marketing behind supplement products. Pharmaceutical marketing is complicated. Supplement marketing is even more complicated. And whereas you can say things in the United States that a supplement does something for something, in Israel you absolutely cannot say. You can't say that vitamin C has been proven since, you know, the 1940s that it works for immune and for flu. So there is always a global gap in what you're allowed to say. Europe is different in supplements to America, to Israel and Australia and things like that. So this is where the FDA is going to feel or give the most pain to the industry, to the point where even if a consumer is commenting that your product helps, let's say, with epilepsy, that's a claim that the FDA is not going to like. So not only do you have to monitor what you are saying about your product, you have to monitor what your customer is saying about your product. And that's, you know, things that we saw coming out from Charlotte's Web, where they had a big, large forum where people were discussing how this was helping them in their medical ailments. And the FDA ruled that that was more like a claim and had to be removed. So it does get very complicated. And you know this as well as as pretty much anyone in the industry, having done this in multi jurisdictions with different regulation in each of them, the easiest thing to do is if you're selling CBD as a food supplement, don't make any claims and don't let your customers publicly make those claims on your own website.
I think a lot of people don't understand, to your point, that, you know, the supplement law, which varies, as you point out, in country to country, the idea that you can make a claim for a naturally occurring product, a nutraceutical, if you will, is based on structure function claims, which mean it's a claim that describes the role of that nutrient or that ingredient on the structure or function of the human body. It still doesn't say that this will cure X, treat X, or address Y, but rather it says it will just improve an existing system within the body. And that varies in different places, as we've discussed, but even when you're that far approved and that complex approval process, as you mentioned, and time-consuming and costly, when you get out the other end of that, you still can't say that this goes over the top and treats a specific condition. So that what we've seen in the nutraceuticals or the natural products industry is, rather than marketing campaigns, it's more of an education campaign. And I think there's a lot of education, certainly in this pandemic, about what is real and what's not, and what do people need to know that we're not really able to get out there. And it's similar about how you would educate people about how to use CBD when you can't come right out and say exactly how these things are treated. So, shifting gears just a little bit to looking at, we know what we can and cannot say about these products without going through certain processes. Unfortunately, not everybody respects those rules. But what does the cannabis plant do? And you alluded to this earlier with your discussion with Dr. Mshulam. What can it do? Can it address, is it an antiviral? Is it an antibacterial? All of these things that you read about, what can it do? We can't put it on a product label, but what should we know about?
So I think we all know the pain modulation, and that's, you know, obviously the thing that cannabis is now probably most famous for. Antibacterial is very interesting when you look at specific cannabinoids like CBD. And there's a company here in Israel called Cannabix, which have done extensive testing on CBG for MRSA, which is resistant Staphylococcus aureus. So those are typically bacteria that have built up to resistance to modern antibiotics, and some of the molecules in cannabis might have some very potent antibacterial and then obviously antiviral. Now, we don't know which of those cannabinoids, and there are, you know, 114 plus cannabinoids and hundreds of molecules in the plant, to say that that is definitively the one at the dose that you've put it in your product is very, very, very tough to say. But there is certainly good indication that that is happening. There's good indication that it's good for bronchodilation. Now, in viruses, especially influenza-like viruses like we're facing now, I don't see cannabis as a bronchodilator particularly being used because, number one, of the stigma, but number two, in compromised breathing conditions, this is going to be a difficult administration. And then obviously immune support. We know CBD is an immune support modulator. And so there's good reason to think that people with immune compromised systems, like getting COVID, might get better quicker, might not have as severe symptoms if they were to take CBD. But once again, this is so unknown that we certainly know the safety profile is very good. So I don't think there's a lot of harm in taking CBD. But then, you know, we're all of a sudden faced with even the fact that ibuprofen might be problematic for COVID. Ibuprofen, obviously, the drug inside Motrin, which is used for fever and flu, has a negative effect in particular with this type of virus. So we really, really, really have to be careful. This is something you don't want to take lightly and don't want to push the envelope on being the one that says you've got the cure when it isn't. Because not only, you know, there is a liability issue, obviously, that you have to think about as well.
Right. Saul, as you've surely seen, there's been disruption to cannabis events worldwide. As you think about upcoming Cannatech events, what is your forecast? We've talked to a couple of people who have mentioned that they might be shifting over to virtual conferences or using other means, other technologies to still work on networking events. What do you think in regards to that?
Yeah, we've been digging into a whole new digital strategy. You know, while we do great events, I think we do them because we've created such an incredible network globally of thought leaders and people who really are striving to make this industry better. And that's something that has helped to set Cannatech apart. So we're going to continue to do that in the digital space, and we're going to launch a couple of tools that we're going to use for community building, which will enhance the event. So for me, this is a great opportunity to really ramp up a digital space, which is webinars and masterclasses and CME points. I've got, you know, 9,000 doctors in Israel who are now quarantined at home. Here's a perfect opportunity to give them continued education that can help them when we all get back to work. And then we have, you know, vendors, sponsors, haven't forgotten that they need the business connections that they get through the event system. And so we're going to enhance that ability now digitally so that everyone can still get the leads that they need in order to execute on whatever business you might currently have, given that, you know, a lot of people are at home and not working.
Yeah, so as you look at those kind of changes, and then, of course, recently you had launched a companion conference, a sister conference, if you will, that addresses psychedelics. Psytech, I believe, is what you're calling it, which is very cool. But let's also talk about that for a moment. That topic, the policy progress, the medicinal progress, the mainstream media coverage of the same mushroom, psilocybin, et cetera, has made such quick progress. What are we going to do there? Is that going to put all of that discussion aside too? Is that going to delay any progress, continued progress in that, as we look at how long it's going to be for us to recover from this, whether that's months or a year or more? We don't know.
Yeah, for sure. So again, we're going to build that ecosystem and allow people to connect in a new way. And to me, it's, you know, about discovery of new technologies, new researchers, new research in that psychedelic space. And we've seen a huge spike pre-corona in trending topics around psilocybin, MDMA, ibogaine. And that's all actually gone down, obviously, now with the world's focus being COVID or COVID-19. So I don't think people are going to forget. I think what's happening is the first few weeks is putting everyone in a tailspin. What am I doing? Where am I getting food? What am I doing with my kids? They're all at home. They're screaming. I find duct tape and rope works the best during work hours. And you know, then we're going to go into this phase of incredible boredom where we're all now searching for how do we get back into it in a new way. And that's where this sort of pivot can make a huge difference where, you know, there's a price barrier to going to a Psytech or a Cannatech. They're high-end events, they'll be beautiful locations, you know, great destination summits, but that comes at a cost, whereas building a digital subscription model connectivity can actually go very broad very quickly if you do it in the right way.
Sure. And I think you hit the nail on the head, Saul, with it might be even more important now going forward to create those opportunities and to get people engaged and talking about all of these issues rather than just staying at home and simply waiting it out.
There's definitely a sense of that when you disrupt your normal routine, whatever that might be with family and children and school and work, when you disrupt that, you kind of resign yourself to the fact that you have to do the complete opposite. And in reality, it's just got to be a new way of doing things. And staying in tune with what's happening in the world and in your space is critical here, particularly when there's just so much progress and so many different things that are happening, especially in our industry, in our space. But as you look at some of the trends going forward, what do you think? Is this something that's going to take 18 months for anything to even resume normality? Is this something where economies of the world start to, come back together in about 6 weeks? I mean, this is obviously uncharted territory for most of us out there, if not all of us. What's it going to take for this thing to come back to any semblance of normality?
I don't think anyone can really predict or say. If you look at the active cases or new cases coming out of Wuhan, it's almost down to zero. But we don't know if there's a reinfection rate. We don't know if it hits a second time. And
well, can we trust data, that information too, right?
Is that
real info? Yeah.
And then you look at the data coming out of Italy, and it's a lot worse. In which case, we're not coming out of this quickly. You know, we originally announced that we're moving the dates to June. We'll reassess that in 2 weeks' time. And I think everyone has to be fluid. And just like educating our kids, the thing that's going to work best is preparing them for rapid change and new things that are coming and not to be scared of that almost startup environment that the world has become. And so for companies, it's exactly the same. To pivot, to retain your core, and we looked very carefully, what is ICANN's core? And for us, it's building that global ecosystem. So it doesn't matter if it's through the events that are live, we have to be able to do that now in the new reality. And I do hope that we come out of this by June, but I don't think that really then people will have the available capital and marketing dollars to do what they were doing, say, a month ago. And even that was cutting back because of the general environment that cannabis had found itself in, which was a lack of available capital and overspending and very, very short budgetary runways, and everyone turned around and said, hang on, I've got to cut my international travel and my marketing anyway. So that starts to come back only at the end of the year, in my opinion.
Well, only time will tell, and we sincerely do appreciate that you spent some time with us during all of this and sharing information. And that's what we're trying to do best, is talk about things that people are in the front of their mind, and just trying to talk through this point in time. And we'll look forward to seeing how you and your conference events, which are always world-class, set the tone here coming out of this thing. And Eric, I think we've said it all.
Can CBD cure coronavirus? Perhaps there is a more important question and opportunity posed by all of this upon us. And maybe it's not just right there, but it's wider in scope. And Saul, thank you for sharing your perspective on all of this. It's highly valuable to all of us.
Thank you, guys. And stay safe. Stay isolated. It isn't crazy, but social isolation is the one thing that can really help the health system cope with what is going to come to it.
Indeed.
Appreciate it, Saul. Take care. Be safe. Be well.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Hoban Minutes special series on coronavirus and cannabis. You can head on over to Hoban.law for more information on this podcast or the Hoban Law Group. If you have any ideas for subjects that we should be covering or any questions you want to pose to Bob or myself, shoot us an email at media@hoban.law. And stay tuned for the next episode on this special series, Coronavirus and Cannabis.